Hi everyone, I'm Jackie White, and today I'm going to be presenting on correlates of HIV risk behaviors and HIV hotspots among transgender residents of Massachusetts. This is data that came out of Fenway Health in Boston, and I'm currently at Yale as a doctoral student. And I have no disclosures to, I have no conflicts of interest to disclose. So first I want to just give a little background on the population that we're talking about today. And so here I'm using the term trans with an asterisk. It's a broad umbrella term used to describe a number of gender nonconforming individuals whose gender identity differs from their assigned birth sex. And so this little infographic here is kind of a nice visual depiction of the many gender identities someone who's trans might hold, but certainly this list isn't comprehensive. Historically, a number of social and structural factors have limited the visibility of trans people. I think probably one of the largest factors here is stigma, which has kept people, trans people, in, down, and away. However, as attitudes have started to change and trans people have had more increasing visibility, we still have limitations around the surveillance of trans health, particularly at the local and national level. The health status of trans people are not routinely collected. And so that limits our understanding of what's happening in this community. However, we do know from a number of convenience samples that there's a high prevalence of a number of adverse health outcomes in some trans communities. For instance, we see a high amount of psychiatric distress, depression, anxiety, as well as very high rates of suicide ideation, which likely stem from the effects of stigma. We also see high rates of substance use, particularly as a means to cope with stigma and discrimination. And then we see high rates of HIV, particularly in trans women and specifically in trans women of color. So in thinking about HIV infection as community and specifically HIV from a geographic perspective, we know that HIV infection typically clusters in geographic hotspots or the areas where the highest HIV people with the highest HIV prevalence. We know that, especially since discussions we've had today with my colleagues here, that various neighborhood and geographic factors can influence individual risk behaviors, such as shared behavioral norms around substance abuse, also environmental exposures like poverty, and structural factors like the disproportionate targeting of certain communities by the police, or unequal access to employment in certain areas, which may drive street economies such as sex work. So understanding risk factors among trans residents, specifically in hotspot areas, will help us to develop more targeted programs, hopefully produce better health outcomes, and will be a better use of resources. So today I'm going to talk about the study's purpose, which essentially was to describe the frequency of demographic and behavioral risk factors among trans residents in Massachusetts by location. And then to look at the demographic and behavioral correlates of residing in HIV hotspot using multivariable logistic regression models. And our hopes with this research is to be able to inform program development, to help generate funds for targeted programs, and ultimately to advance health policies to support trans health. So first I want to tell you a little bit about Project Voice, which is the study that these data came from. Project Voice was a community-based needs assessment that was conducted through the Massachusetts Transgender Political Coalition in collaboration with the Fenway Institute at Fenway Health. And since it was a statewide needs assessment, our primary data collection modality was online, so we had an online survey link. We disseminated this link to via social media and various community organizations. We really worked very closely with folks on the ground to make sure that we were tapping into existing networks of trans communities to be able to collect data on trans folks from across Massachusetts. And so folks were eligible to be part of this study if they self-identified as being transgender or gender nonconforming, if they were 18 years or older, and if they had lived in Massachusetts for at least 3 months of the prior year. And so, like I said, we did primarily use an online survey modality, but we also purposely sampled folks in person in order to reach folks that have been traditionally underrepresented in online research. So we were able to get more folks of color and also individuals with lower incomes. And so based on the sample of 452 Project Voice participants, this particular analytic sample limited it to just individuals who were living in Massachusetts at the time of the survey and just those who are HIV uninfected. Since there was a small proportion of HIV-infected folks, we really wanted to focus on risk factors as a primary prevention. So in terms of demographics, we assessed the usual demographic factors, age, race, ethnicity, education, income. We looked at income in terms of different categories, but in this particular analysis, we look at lower income versus higher income, with the cutoff being less than $35,000 a year. We also looked at incarceration history, so whether folks had ever served time in jail or prison. And then for the gender identity variable, we used a two-step method where we looked at sex at birth, and then we also asked what folks' current gender identity is, and we provided a number of different options, but also an other option so individuals could self-identify. For behavioral risk factors, we looked at smoking and whether or not individuals were currently smoking, binge drinking in the past 3 months, so whether individuals reported drinking five or more beverages at one time in the past 3 months, and then poly-drug use, which was defined as using two or more illicit drugs in the past 12 months. We also looked at HIV testing history, so whether folks had never been tested, whether they had been tested within 6 months, or whether they had been tested more than 6 months ago. We also looked at sexual risk behavior, so partner characteristics, the gender of recent partners, as well as sexual positioning, and whether or not condoms were used. And for the HIV hotspot variable, we used 2013 Massachusetts Department of Public Health surveillance data to identify the three cities in Massachusetts that made up the greatest proportion of HIV prevalence. And so those, not surprisingly, were Boston, Springfield, and Worcester, which are the three largest cities in Massachusetts. And so this just gives you an understanding of where Boston is. So it's right here, and then Worcester here, and Springfield here. And so these three cities accounted for 38% of the HIV prevalence in Massachusetts in 2013. So in terms of our results, the sample tended to be younger. 56% were between 18 and 29. We also saw that the is largely white non-Hispanic respondents, 80% were white non-Hispanic. Although this is actually pretty much mirrors the racial ethnic distribution in Massachusetts, so we were on track with that. So for education, we see that this tends to be a more highly educated sample. 86% had completed some college or more. So this just is a map of showing you, again, where the three cities that we're talking about for the HIV hotspot, and then we had 17% of our sample resided in the HIV hotspot city. So we did multivariable logistic regression models adjusted for survey modality, and within these models we included age, race, income, HIV testing history, incarceration history, substance use, and sexual risk behavior. And all of these variables were significant at the bivariate level before being included in the final multivariable model. So I'm just going to break it down by different variables, even though all of these variables were included in the same model. So you see here with age that using the 18 to 29 group as the referent group, that folks that were 50 and older were at greater odds of living in an HIV hotspot location compared to the younger folks. For race, income, and incarceration, we see that lower income, so making less than $35,000 a year, being a person of color, or reporting having a history of incarceration, were all significantly associated with living in a hotspot location. For substance use, individuals reported being a current smoker, those that reported binge drinking in the past 3 months, and those who reported using two or more substances in the past 12 months were all at significantly greater odds of living in an HIV hotspot location compared to non-smokers, those that did not report binge drinking, and those that used one or zero substances in the past 12 months. And lastly, with the sexual risk outcome, we looked at unprotected receptive anal sex, either with a cisgendered man or a trans woman at their last sexual encounter. And we see that those who reported engaging in this type of sexual risk behavior were at greater odds of living in a hotspot location compared to those who did not engage in this risk behavior. So in terms of a summary, we see that living in a hotspot was associated with older age, lower income, minority race ethnicity, incarceration history, substance abuse, and high-risk sexual behavior, which, as you know, these are all factors that at the individual level have been associated with increased HIV risk. I think that this is particularly interesting because these are risk factors within an area that already has a high prevalence of HIV. So if we're thinking about sexual networks potentially contributing to greater risk for HIV, the fact that these individual behaviors are occurring among trans people in an already HIV prevalent area is something to especially consider when we're thinking about targeted prevention programs. So in terms of limitations, these were cross-sectional data, so we can't assess causality. Also, this was a non-probability sample, so it was a convenience sample, but we did purposely recruit racial and ethnic minorities and lower income folks to try to get a more generalizable sample. We also lacked participant addresses, so we weren't really able to look at anything at the neighborhood level, although I think that's an important future direction for research, specifically with trans communities. But in terms of the strengths, we had a number of strengths in terms of our collaborative efforts with community members and community organizations to be able to reach a broad sector of the trans community within Massachusetts. This is also statewide data on a relatively hidden population, so it's a good contribution there. And lastly, it's a location-based analysis, so there's been an increasing amount of work done within trans communities, but it hasn't really looked at what's happening by geographic location. So this is a contribution there. So I just want to conclude with saying that now is a great time to be studying trans health. Due to changing attitudes and the concerted efforts of dedicated trans community members and allies, policies are changing. Trans folks are becoming a community that legislators and healthcare workers are caring about and making efforts to change health inequities in this community, but there's still a lot of work to go. And so when we're thinking about prevention resources, you know, we know that prevention resources are already allocated to the areas with the highest HIV prevalence. But without surveillance data, we don't know if these funds are even reaching the highest risk groups, and in particular, trans communities. So that's the question that we still have and requires greater effort. And really, we need health surveillance data to understand the true health of trans populations. And in terms of future research, we need additional research on the interpersonal factors that are happening at the neighborhood level, as well as the environmental and structural factors that are shaping risks, particularly in high-prevalence hotspot cities. I want to acknowledge my wonderful collaborators, Dr. Sarah Reisner is here with us right now, and Matthew Mimiaga, both of Fenway and Harvard, the Project Voice collaborators, so my colleagues at Fenway, and also Massachusetts Transgender Political Coalition, who helped to who were instrumental in this work, and then of course the wonderful community members and organizers who dedicated their time to be able to make this project happen. And briefly, those are the references I mentioned. And here's my information. You can also find the full Project Voice report, which is the larger survey, through the Fenway Health website. So I encourage you to look that up. Thank you.